This is Diane, and it's Tuesday, October 21st, and this is the 2 p.m. group. Quite a full house today. So there's a few new folks on the call today, so I wanted to just remind everybody from a positive perspective of what we're going to do here. We're going to do a check-in. We've got a large group. We've got 11 folks on. So it's a pretty full house today. So I'm going to ask folks to keep comments brief, and we'll try to save some time for laser coaching. So if there's a few folks that want to dig in on the topic a little bit deeper, we leave time for that. We're going to do a quick check-in, ask a few folks to report on how things went from last time. We talked about activating the brain, and then we'll take aim and have everybody kind of get real specific on what we're going to focus on for in terms of challenge area for this week. I'll talk for about 10 minutes about our topic today, which is parenting positively, and then we'll hear from you guys, your thoughts on that topic. We'll do some laser coaching, and then we'll wrap up all in the course of an hour. And so thank you all for being here. This is a large group, and so I think that one of the things, if you're feeling like we would love to see to balance these groups out a little bit, and so if you do have flexibility to move to one of the other times that we have the same age group, would love for you to send me a note, and we can get you switched over. But we're still doing some last-minute balancing of the different groups. So with that, how have things been going? I want to hear from about three of you guys on how things have been going with activating the brain. Who wants to start? How about Mia?
I'm sure. So hi, this is Mia. It's been going pretty well. We started medication 2 weeks ago, so we've been doing a lot of data gathering and monitoring and using in conjunction with the activating strategies that we were talking about. It's going relatively well. I'm knocking on wood as I say that. So I feel like we're maybe stabilizing a little bit. So.
Yeah. What are you noticing most, Mia?
I'm noticing that, I'm getting a lot less notes from the teacher, which is really nice, and my daughter is now, she's come home and reported that she's woken up the side of her brain that tells her she really should stay in her seat, so she's feeling empowered with the medicine helping her with that a little bit, so that's really heartening, although she did say the other side of her brain that tells her she'd really rather be playing outside and having a tea party is still awake, too, so it's really interesting here. Her perception of her brain, and it really reinforces the idea of activating the brain as that side that's telling you what you should do, getting that one engaged and awake as well. So
yeah, well, and the thing that it always helps is they notice the difference. I think that's such a big piece when they have that aha moment where they see that they're able to be more successful, quote unquote. So it's like they're able to sit still, or they're able to, finish an assignment within a reasonable time. It really does make a big difference. So thanks.
And it's really helping
that
with her dyslexia training too, because she's got dyslexia. So that coaching. So this, I think we're seeing the biggest impact on that ability to focus in that intervention for her. So I'm hoping that trend will continue, and that she'll see some success on the reading front, and that'll help to rebuild her confidence and her capabilities more broadly. So.
Great. Anybody else having some successes with activating the brain?
Can you just tell me what exactly that means?
What activating? So activating the brain is one of the four critical response areas that we focus in on. It can be through nutrition or exercise or sufficient sleep. Medication is a way that some if your child is on medication, that would be a way to activate the brain, but it's really about understanding that one of the things going on for our kids is that they've got a neurobiological challenge, and you need to be able to address brain health from a lot of different angles. So the call 2 weeks ago was on activating the brain. If you want to go back and listen to that, you can get a whole lot more detail.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Anybody else had some successes in the last couple weeks they want to share with the group?
This is Amanda, and I missed the activating your brain call. I was traveling internationally. But I just wanted to share a quick breakthrough from the call the two times before. I was focused on homework, and I really deeply listened to him complaining about noise bothering him, and we changed our homework strategy so that I removed the four-year-old also, who I think will be diagnosed ADHD, from the scene, and I leave him completely alone. He's now blowing through his homework, and he's doing it correctly and in a normal time quickly. And the other amazing thing, just yesterday he was diagnosed with convergence insufficiency, where his eyes don't track on the page up close for the small prints of like a chapter book. And the doctor said 2/3 of the kids that he sees that he diagnosed are also diagnosed ADHD. And he didn't know if it was, separate or together, some were being misdiagnosed. I'm sure my child has ADHD in addition, but I think this will be really helpful. So that's a big thing I'm celebrating.
Great. Well, and the thing, Amanda, I love about that is that you got really curious about the homework piece of it and said what's really going on, and were able to identify that he was getting distracted and found a way to give him some more isolation and some more privacy that will help him to be more successful in focusing. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. The more I listened to him, instead of implementing what I thought would work, the more successful I have been.
That's a great lesson for all of us. Thanks for saying that. Awesome. Any other successes that you guys have had over the last couple of weeks that you want to share and celebrate with the group? Great. Any significant challenges you guys had with activating the brain?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I just want to share, I was supposed to report back on my protein taste test, and we tried it with a blindfold and a whole bunch of food laid out, and it was really overwhelming for my kids is what I learned, is that was just too much. They couldn't taste more than one flavor at a time, so we really, although I thought it would be fun, kind of like the lesson that was just shared, it wasn't for them, so we've just been trying one new food at each meal, so much fun to play the game.
Well, and I think that this is the thing, is that, we get curious instead of, it's hard, especially when our kids are the age that the younger groups are. It's like you do so much more directing than you do responding, because with older kids, they're much more verbal. They're much more able to articulate what's going on with them. But if you can find a way to just listen or get their feedback in a way that makes sense, you can learn so much. And even just trying and experimenting, like something as simple as playing a game and seeing how it works and what it does and what doesn't work, can make all the difference. So thanks for sharing that, Mia. Okay. So before we get started on our topic for today, I want everybody to get real specific and take aim on one area. And so when we take aim, we don't want to just say, okay, my kid's having a hard time with homework, or my kid's having a hard time keeping their hands to themselves. We want to really get specific. So my child is having a difficult time turning in his assignments that are completed, or my child is having a very difficult time sitting still while trying to finish his homework in the afternoons, or my child is having a very difficult time keeping his hands to himself in class. So whatever it is, get really specific. And so take a little note for yourself before we get started. What in your mind are you going to take aim on? What are you going to focus in on? And I got this question asked at noon, so I'll answer it here as well. They said, well, do I need to pick something that attaches to positive parenting, because that's what the topic is today, or can I pick anything? And what I would tell you is that the way that the model is set up, technically you could pick anything. The reality is that we've designed this model so that the four critical response areas will really support virtually any challenge, but the advantage of the fact that we're picking one of the four right now, you might want to go ahead and find one that you know that you have a difficult time parenting positively, or you think you could do a good job parenting positively that would help you to move the situation forward. So the short answer is pick anything, but if you want to pick something you think you want to be more positive about, it might be a good thing to focus in on. Does anybody need any help taking aim? I know sometimes it's hard to get really specific.
Well, this is Barbie, and this is my first time, and I've listened to two calls, and so I've heard others take aim, and I guess one thing that I've noticed about my son, he's 8, he has a very difficult time sitting at the dinner table. Most times he doesn't really like what I serve, so he just pops up and leaves, or he'll eat really quick and leave, and leave, dance around, come back, that type of thing. So I guess what I'd really like to do is maybe have him sit at the table with the family so we can have one family meal together. I'm not even going to really make food an issue, but just the time at the table.
Right. So what I'm hearing you say is that you'd like him to be able to spend a little bit more time connected with the family at the table rather than just getting up and taking off again the minute he's done eating. Okay.
Correct.
What is it about that that's important to you?
I think it would be a nice time for us all to sit down, share the day, just talk. Also, really just be able to have good, I mean, this might be nitpicking, but have good table manners so that when we go out to eat, we know what's expected. When we go to somebody else's house, we know what's expected, that type of thing. That we can
okay.
sit at a meal for, I don't know, if we could sit at the table for 7 minutes or something like that. I just randomly said that number, but.
Yeah, well, so I'm hearing two different things. So this is a great example of taking aim. Is it about his manners at the table that you want to take aim, or is it about just getting him to sit still and be present with the family for a little bit longer?
I guess manners are a whole other thing, really, because that's more the behavior at the table. But I just would love it if he could be sit with us at the table so that we can converse.
Great. And so that's a great way to get really specific. It's not about necessarily about how he's sitting at the table or what he's doing while he's at the table, but it's really about being there and being able to find a way to be at least a little present so you can have some connection time with the family. Does that help get it clear on what you're taking aim on?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else need help taking aim?
That issue or a different issue?
Who is that?
Me? Lauren?
Lauren, so you said there's two different issues and you're trying to decide which one?
No, I said, are you talking about anybody else need help on that issue or a different issue?
No, I want you to, so what we start with is taking aim. So you want to pick one particular area, one challenge area for you that you want to take aim on during this call today.
Okay, so I have something, but it didn't have to do with that one. I just didn't know if we were done with that.
I just want to make sure. Go ahead.
Well, my issue is that my son does not take no for an answer for anything. So he just keeps, like, you can't get him to stop, but he won't take no.
What do you want to have happen instead of him saying no?
Yesterday we were watching my son's football game, and he wanted me to play with him while I was watching. And I was watching the game, and I didn't want to run around and, you know, with the football in my hand. He would not give up, and he kept saying it over and over again, you know, come play with me, come play with me, come play with me, you know, like, I'll put the flag on you, then you run. And I was like, no, then I'll run and you catch me. He didn't take no for an answer, and he wasn't going to give up. So finally, like, I ran for 2 seconds. I was like, okay, I'm done. But it's hard. It's like, why can't you ever take no for an answer?
Yeah. So what do you want him to do instead, Lauren? To remind me of how old he is?
He's 8.
8. Okay. And so what would you like for the outcome to be?
Okay, we'll play later then. or okay, I'll watch the game and maybe you can play with me after, or something. Just not being so constantly like pestering, like relax.
So so the question is it when you redirect him to do other things, does he not follow through, or is it that you want him to be able to come up with his own idea of what he can do instead of what he wants to do?
It's just whatever he comes up with, he doesn't think no. Like, there's no, if he wants something, he's going to keep pushing until he gets it, and he'll make it stick in the head until we get it, That's
okay.
Hard.
Okay, so it's you're taking aim on finding a way to, because what's really, if I get curious here, what's really going on is he's getting hyper-focused on something. So it's kind of like whether it's the football or the whatever else, it's like that's what his brain wants. And so what it sounds like you're looking for is you're taking aim on his challenge of hyper-focus, which is making it difficult for him to take no for an answer. Is that fair?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He gets stuck on something and he won't move on.
Right, and so his brain's having a difficult time. So it's a transition challenge from a brain perspective. His brain's having a difficult time moving on to the next thing. And even when you say, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that, we can do that later, or no, I'm sorry, I've got to do this now, he's having a difficult time letting go of it from a transition perspective. So how does that feel as a thing to take aim on? Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. Anybody else need help with taking aim?
Diane, this is Amanda. Is it sufficiently focused enough to be taking aim on my son's snarky talk back when he is feeling tired or hungry or the medicine's real worn off?
Okay, well, so the good news, and what you just shared is that you understand why he's being snarky, because he needs some brain activation, right? So he's tired and he's hungry. So, so the question I would ask is, can you clearly identify what you want him to do instead of what you don't want him to do?
I would like him to use polite words, even when he is tired or, let's say, deactivated.
Okay. Well, and so remind me again, Amanda, how old is your child?
He is going to turn 7 in a couple weeks.
Great. So at 7, if I'm honest, and I don't know your son, and he may be completely different than every other 7-year-old that I've worked with their parent, it may not be realistic for him to do it automatically the first time. But when corrected, it may be appropriate for him to say, look, I'm going to try, so your strategy might end up being something like try again or try something different rather than expecting him to do it the first time. But I think it's a great one to focus in on. So just want to set some, we'll talk about expectations next time, but, you want to set yourself up for what's realistic with him at 7.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'm going to move on to parenting positively, and we are talking about section 5 in the workbook. I'm on page 21, and nope, I'm wrong. That's the next chapter. I'm on page
18.
Thank you. Yep, absolutely. So parenting positively, as I mentioned, is one of the 4 critical response areas, and the focus with this one is really on really putting the relationship with your child at the forefront. And what happens to a lot of us when we're parenting, and I know this is so true for me and a lot of the parents that I work with, is that we end up with this conflict, because there's part of us that wants our kids to do really well, and we want to not have to struggle, and we want to have things go easily, and we want them to just get things done. It's like a performance value we have, right? And that conflicts quite frequently with a part of us that knows we don't want to harp on our kids, we don't want to yell at our kids. We want to be nice mom or dad. We want to be kind. We want to be patient. And there ends up being this conflict between the part of us that wants our kids to be, quote, unquote, successful, and the part of us that knows that we don't want to be a mean mom or a mean dad. And so what this critical response area is, it gives us an idea to specifically focus in on the relationship first and use that as a way to get the success in not necessarily in a backwards way, but as a result of a more positive focus. It's about focusing on our child's strengths. It's about focusing on what's working rather than what's broken. You know, I know from positive psychology perspective, if we focus on what works, we can have much more success than if we focus on, you know, correcting something that's wrong. And, you know, some of the reading that I've done has suggested that, you know, you want to have, if you have to, our kids get a lot of opportunity to make mistakes, right? We're constantly correcting them. They're always doing something that's not exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But the strategy suggests that you need to have at least a 3-to-1 ratio of positive reinforcement to correction in order to move a situation forward. And in a relationship, in order to continue to have a favorable and positive relationship, that ratio needs to be 5-to-1. And that's really hard. You know, it's like I know for myself, even trying to keep it, you know, 1-to-1, where it's like every time I correct my child, they come back and say something positive, it's really difficult to do. And so we want to focus on finding ways to focus on what's working. And the other piece of this is to, you know, let go of the problem and look at the child. So you have a child who's having a difficult time, you know, sitting at the dinner table. And so it's less about the dinner table and more about what does my child need right now? You know, and looking at the child in that situation and say, you know, getting curious. We had a child in the 10 in the noon class today who was pestering the cat and was, like, getting into a lot of trouble because he was really, the cat kept biting him and he was injuring the cat. And it was like, when she was able to kind of say, what's really going on? What does my child need right now? It was really a child who was looking for some attention and some support and was feeling kind of bored and isolated and needed some in a different level of engagement. And so parenting positively is about looking at what your child needs, focusing on what's working, focusing on their strengths, and it helps us to be more productive. It helps our child to be more productive, and it really does move the situation forward. So what comes up for all of you guys as I talk about this concept of parenting positively?
I guess, like, that instead of looking at, like, taking no for an answer, looking at how you can say yes, or, like, how you can play football with them for a minute so they don't feel like they're left out or something like that.
That's a great idea, Lauren. I know that one of the rules that I had for myself for a long time was that I was going to try, and I started this by doing this for a week, and I was like, I'm going to try to say yes whenever I can and just see what happens. And unless I had a really good reason, I was going to say yes. And I just did this as an experiment, and it made such a big difference because then my kids trusted me to be willing to say yes if I could, because I found myself saying no a lot. So I think that that's great, is if you can find the yes in the situation. Even if it's, I will play with you after the football game, or let's do this for now, and then we'll do that. You know, but finding the yes in whatever the situation is. Who else?
I think when you say the 3-to-1 and the 5-to-1 ratio, that really makes me think that when they are doing something that's not getting them in trouble, something that's not wrong, something that's not calling attention to negativity, I pretty much let him be, because that's like, oh, good. He's doing some, you know, he's not being a bother. Nobody's being hurt. Nothing's being broken. I can get some stuff done. I can cook dinner or whatever. Maybe take those opportunities to go over and just pat him on his back or give him a thumbs up or say, you know, great job on the computer or whatever he's doing, just so it feeds that 5-to-1. Because otherwise,
yeah,
it might be kind of hard. I don't know. But
yeah, no, I think that's great. I think that, you know, we lose track of the fact that, you know, that our kids really love and thrive on positive feedback. We all do. I mean, when, you know, we have a boss or somebody who says, good job on that project. I mean, how great does that feel? Anybody else?
So is Mia. One of my insights trying to practice positive parenting is it's really more around managing my own energy and reactions than the kids and stopping the negative loop, because when I get frustrated, I tend to go, the ratio gets off, shall we say, in terms of, you know, trying to correct more. And so one tool I've used for this is to try to have a highlight reel. It sounds a little cheesy, but, you know, when you're having a tough time with homework, after homework, let's reflect on all the things that have gone right today, and that the kids like to hear it. They might complain a little bit about, oh, Mom, you know, whatever. But I find when I don't do it, they ask for it. And it also kind of restores my perspective that, hey, that was only a little stuff that was tough, and there was a lot of good stuff that happened today. So it's, I guess, a little bigger than positive parenting. It's a kind of an attitude of being grateful for the things that have gone right today.
Yeah, I know a lot of several clients who have a gratitude practice. So every day as a family, they sit down and they say, you know, what's one thing that happened today that you're grateful for? Or they do it for themselves. Like you said, sometimes it's managing our own mindset. And so if every night before, you know, or every morning when you get up in the morning, or every night before you, you know, shut down for the night, you sit down and say, okay, what are five things that happened today that I'm grateful for? You know, it's just, it conditions us to notice the things that work, because it's so easy to find the stuff that doesn't. We need to begin exercise that muscle. Like Barbie said, you don't, you know, you just kind of leave them alone when they're doing good. You need to start exercising the muscle that notices when they're doing well, so that they can, you know, so you can remember to praise them. Thanks. Anybody else? What comes up around positive parenting?
Our kids in class do a bucket challenge of filling the bucket. Maybe we could help fill the kids' bucket literally, like give them a little bucket and we could just write notes in there or something like that. I don't know. That's just something that the school does, and thinking about positive parenting, maybe that's something that could be brought home. That they
tell me a little bit more. I'm not familiar with the bucket challenge other than the one where you're dumping water over somebody's head.
There's a little book out for elementary age kids, and it's called, oh gosh, what's it called? How to fill a bucket. Bucket filler,
like,
I think,
and
basically
filler,
it's about everybody walks around with a bucket, and if you do kind things, if you say positive things, say nice things, whatever, you're filling that person's bucket, and not only do they feel good, but you feel good as well. And then when you do negative things, it takes away from the other person as well as you. And the class that my daughter is actually in, not my son, but she's in elementary as well. They have a bucket that they fill throughout, and it's kind of geared towards the class. What did the class do well today? And people will come by and drop in positive notes about what people had done well in class. And feel good, kind of feel good, positive reinforcement of the things that are going right in the class versus maybe some of the disruptions that have happened. So.
Right. So actually, now that you say that, Tom Ross. Just for everybody, Tom Rath, R-A-T-H, he wrote a book called How Full Is Your Bucket? And he it looks like he's got a kid's version that I've never seen that's now out there on Amazon, just focused on self-esteem and encouragement.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing that.
It's a sweet book, and maybe that could really align well with our positive parenting. We're parenting positively this week is give our kids a little bucket that we can fill, and maybe they could even participate as well, comment on each other in only a positive way. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I know that we did that for a while where it's like if you said something snarky or unkind to one of your siblings, you had to say three things that you liked about them kind of immediately right away. So it's kind of like one of those sort of, you know, 3-to-1 balancing acts. In the near term, it gets them thinking about what they say before they say it, because they have, you know, they have to then say something nice. You know. Other thoughts around parenting positively from the group?
I have a question. This
sure.
is Lauren. What do you do when your kids see you treating that child differently than a sibling? Like you're allowing them to sit at the table. Not perfectly, but they can't. And you're allowing them to get away with certain things that they can't.
Yeah, it's difficult when you have to have different standards for different kids. How old is the other sibling?
Well, I have four other children, and they all see it, and they wonder, why did Eric get away with it? And then it looks, I'm confused myself. It's like, because my parents say it, and my husband says it, that he's manipulating me. And I don't feel that way, because I feel like he can't control the same things that other kids can. But it looks that way. Like, he's getting away with it. Why is he getting away with it? Why is he able to manipulate you to do something that the other kids can't? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It makes perfect sense. And I guess that the adult version of it, and I think we've got to figure out how to bring it down to the child level, is that every child is different developmentally. And you wouldn't expect a 2-year-old to be able to do the same thing that a 14-year-old can do. And the challenge is that they're at similar ages and they're kind of more clumped in together. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to set expectations for them based on the level that they can be successful. And so, you know, as a mom, it's your job to challenge everybody to do their best. And, you know, if once, I'm making this up, but once Johnny's able to get everything on the table, then the next step will be for Johnny to learn how to get everything in a nice order and neatly. You know, so we've got to kind of get them to the first step and then the next step. So it's like you wouldn't expect them to, you know, crawl before they walk before they crawl, that sort of thing. So that's the adult version, and it's a matter of finding ways to communicate that to your child that helps them to understand that everybody's different, everybody's direct brain works differently, and you're going to set the rules based on what you can reasonably expect each of them to do. Does that make sense?
And, like, so when do you know if it's they can handle it or they're manipulating you because they understand that if they keep pushing you or they know that you're getting up, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a very gray area sometimes.
No, I get it. And we're going to talk about expectations next time a little bit more. But what I would tell you is that with rare exception, and most of your kids are in that 8 to 11 age group, our kids want to do well.
So basically younger, 8 younger.
What's that?
They're 8 and younger, but, like, the one that...
Yeah, I mean, our kids want to do... Yeah, I mean, I think that's the piece, is that, you know, it's... You know, I would love to kind of spend a little bit more time... is this Lauren? Kind of coming in on this with you, but I think that the reality is that we'll talk about this more next time. It's about figuring out, we call it naughty versus neurological. Have you heard us use that language before?
Yeah. That's what I've been saying, but
on one end of the spectrum is naughty and one end of the spectrum is neurological. And the reality is that for most of our kids, they're usually skewed towards neurological and less towards naughty,
uh-huh.
And obviously there's some naughty and there's some little bit of both. But the way I like to look at it is, as I said, let's assume for a minute that 100% of this was naughty. How would I handle it? Okay, so
right.
I punish. Does it work? Does it work? Does it work to punish it? Does it work to treat it like it's completely naughty? And 100% of the time, it doesn't work to treat it as if it's 100% naughty. So then I go the other direction. I say, okay, if I was going to assume that 100% of this was neurological, how would I handle it? And I kind of look at it both ways, and then I figure out what, you know, where to land in between. But by and large, particularly at these younger ages, it's mostly they're developmentally. It's not. It's less about naughty and more about neurological.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
Okay.
That's
so we're going to parent. So Lauren, if you were going to parent positively in that, how would parenting positively help you handle that situation differently?
Always trying to be the advocate and the one that cares the most about him, as opposed to looking at him as he's trying to do something that's, just, you know, to get attention and be bad.
Right. So always to see that it's not about trying to be bad. It's about there's some other reason underneath it, and assuming that
right,
know, they're doing the best that they
do.
Can. Yeah. Great. Thank you for that. Okay. Any other thoughts on parenting positively or what Lauren and I were just talking about? Happy to do a little bit of a sidestep if we need to. Okay. So what gets in the way of parenting positively?
Probably what was talked about a couple weeks ago, self-care. If you're not feeling good yourself, it's hard to kind of be positive to others. So if you're not eating right, if you're tired.
Right. Yeah, it all kind of connects in together, doesn't it? Darn it, we got to go back and do that lesson from 2 weeks ago.
Being busy, I think, also, you know, getting multiple children, helping everybody with homework, running them around to different activities, getting dinner ready, cleaning up, getting everybody to bed, just being really busy. It's kind of hard to be proactive about something, I guess, new in the routine.
Well, the other piece of what you're just saying is that correcting something that's broken feels more urgent than celebrating
right.
something that's working. And so the energy around it is, oh, my gosh, I got to fix this. This has to change. This can't be. How dare they? They're defiant. They're disrespectful. They're bad, whatever it is. I mean, and so you go into search and destroy mode. So it's like, I've got to fix this. And so the level of urgency at which you approach it tends to be more significant. You know, what would it mean to put a higher priority and more urgency on parenting positively?
I do think it's something that you have to really think about because everybody, moms, dads, we're all busy when the kids come home from school and there's so much going on. I think you almost have to say at the quarter of that, you know, every quarter hour, you need to stop what you're doing and check on the kid, just catch them being good, I guess. I mean, try and really put it into the schedule. Otherwise, I don't know, the urgency might be lost in all the to-dos of driving people around, and I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the 5 hours we have them when they come home from school.
Yeah. So do others feel just kind of a quick yes? Do others feel the same way that Barbie just shared, which is that it's hard to remember to do this?
Definitely.
Well, I do think it's like physically impossible sometimes.
Yeah. So that's the reality. I mean, we're trying to create a habit here. And some of us, you know, I think that when we're conscious and we're calm and we're well-rested and we're feeling good and we've had a really good day and our kids had a good day, it's much easier to do this than when it's, you know, been a really awful, struggling, stress-producing day. But the reality is that it may be more important to do it on those days, both for you and for your child, because focusing on the positive is also self-care for you. It doesn't just help your kid, but it also helps you because the more you focus on the, you know, positive psychology says what you focus on grows. So if you focus on what's working, you're going to see more of what they're doing well. If you focus on what's broken, you're going to see everything that is broken. It's just the way the brain works. So I find that most people need some kind of reminder, some kind of challenge, some kind of you know, whether it's a post-it note on your mirror to remind you, or whether it's a gratitude practice at the end of the day, or whether it's a, you know, the bucket that sits on the counter so that you see it all the time. But something that's going to be a visual or physical reminder for you to focus in on being positive. So what ideas do folks have?
This is Amanda. When I get in the negative headspace and I'm not having fun because I'm too busy, I've got X, Y, and Z to do, I've started having a dance break. I turn on a song. I invite the kids to come dance with me for a dance break. And we just dance for 3 minutes. And then it's understood that we all go back to what we were doing. But we just stop and have fun for 3 minutes and then go back. And I'm in such a better headspace after I do that.
Yeah. Well, and that can also be a great reward. So it's kind of like if your child is successful in focusing on their homework for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever a reasonable amount of time it is for them, you know, to do something like, okay, we're going to put on one song and dance and have a great time and really shift the energy in the room. I mean, there's lots of good ways to use that. Thanks for that suggestion, Amanda. Yeah. The other thing that reminded me of is humor. And humor is a great, we have a whole, I think we probably have a whole lesson on humor. But humor is a great positive tool because it's hard to be, to laugh and be angry at the same time and be frustrated at the same time. I mean, it's much easier. It really does break the energy. So if you can, you know, tell a joke or make light of a situation and then, you know, it doesn't, again, we're not trying to brush over this stuff. We're not trying to ignore it. I mean, what we're really trying to do is to problem solve. And it's difficult to problem solve when you're in crisis mode. You know, literally, our kids, particularly if they're ADD, that they don't have, you know, if they're in crisis mode, the part of their brain that knows what they should and shouldn't do, they don't have access to it. And the same thing is true for us. The part of us, when we're angry and frustrated and overwhelmed and completely stressed out, the part of our brain that can figure out what the best solution is in the situation, we don't even have access to that part of our brain because it's shut down. So we really got to focus in on, you know, shifting the energy, moving it forward. And again, none of these are in a vacuum, so we aren't just going to walk around and parent positively all the time. We're going to do something else once we've kind of figured out what the shift the family needs. Okay. So we do have, if somebody wants to volunteer to do some laser coaching, we've got about 5 minutes to do a quick coaching, maybe one or two people around a particular issue. Does anybody want to volunteer?
I'll volunteer, Sheila.
Okay, Sheila. So what's going on with you?
Well, my kids are saying bad words to each other, you know, first thing in the morning. Butt sniffer, but you know, but every variety of butt, you know, and the word.
Jill, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Did you change your relationship with your phone? Nope, I'm still, it's really, you sound really distant.
I had you on speaker. Is this better?
Yep, it is. Great, thank you.
Okay, so the twins say bad words back to their older brother. And like cuss words, and then he will go over and squeeze their arms or hit them or something like that, and he'll say, "They said a bad word to me." And that's
okay.
Kind of how we start off our morning.
So whose behavior do you want to focus in on, the bad words or the response to the bad words?
The bad words.
Okay. So what are the family guidelines and rules about using nice language?
I don't know. We don't have any because I try not to make a big deal about that. I don't really know what to do when they say some, you know, an inappropriate word.
Well, and I think that's why I asked you the question, because it sounds almost like you have to decide, you know, do you ignore the bad behavior and focus on the older child jumping in and parenting, or can you reasonably change the behavior of the younger one? So which way do you go?
I don't know. I'm guessing if maybe they didn't start, you know, if they didn't say those words, I don't know how to stop them from saying them.
So if your other son wasn't in the room, how would you handle the situation with that word?
They don't say the bad word unless he's there.
Okay. So my guess is that this is a cause and effect sort of thing, right? So they're doing it to get his goat. Is that fair?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So in that instance, my guess is that, you know, so let's pretend it wasn't bad words. You know, pretend it was something completely different and they were trying to get his attention and trying to get a rise out of him.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's trying to get a rise out of you, how do you handle it?
Ignore.
Okay. So given that is that you want to teach your older child to begin to ignore it. So,
yeah.
So Okay. So that would, to me, would say that the direction of action is towards your older child rather than the younger ones. Because if he stops reacting, they'll probably stop saying the bad words. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So how can you help your son understand what's going on with the little one?
Well, I could tell him that they say those words because it makes them feel powerful. Or they can't really hit him because he'll hit them back harder. So they're frustrated, and then they say a bad word to get to make him upset.
Right. So, and how is pinching them back helping him to calm his upset?
Well, he feels like they deserve it.
Okay. But it's making him feel powerful back because it's like...
Right. Okay.
So if his goal is to feel in control in this situation, then maybe it's about having him see that he has a choice to do something else. And so he could choose to walk out of the room, or he could choose to ignore it, or he could choose to do something silly instead. You know, so you could use that humor thing. You could use the same sort of parenting positively thing with him when they, you know, he maybe has some magical made-up word that he uses that he says back to them that is kind of like just in a silly voice and, you know, and changes the
mm-hmm.
energy. It's about helping him to see that he has power in the situation and that there's healthier ways to respond than the physical. And I think the other thing I would encourage you to do is if you don't have a house rule about physical interaction and hitting or touching or pinching, that might be another place that, you know, because our kids have a hard time expressing themselves beyond the physical, and so you need to find other ways to help them to do it, and sometimes you have to put a rule around physical expression. Does that make sense?
Yes. The thing about rules that I don't understand is how to enforce them, because you can have a rule where we, you know, but then when the rule gets broken, then what happens?
Well, and so the question is, you know, what's the motivation for him and what's the reward? So you're trying to get him to change the behavior, which is when the kids say bad words to you, instead of pinching, I want you to, you know, pick a different behavior and then do that. And so maybe what you do is you create a reward for him that says, you know, if you're able to handle a situation and you know, what is it that motivates him? Is it, you know, is it praise from you? And maybe something as simple as when you notice him keep his cool, you say, good job. I noticed you didn't lose it with your brothers and sisters. I can't remember what you said with two siblings that are boys or what. But you want to create a reward for the son, that your older son that is appealing and motivating to him. And you want to do it in a short period of time because he's only 8, right? So you don't want to have him have to do it all day. You might want to pick a 2-hour period. And if he's able to kind of keep his cool with his siblings, then maybe he gets to, you know, stay up an extra 15 minutes and read a book with mom, or get a special treat or something, you know, that just kind of shows and sets him apart. How does that resonate for you?
Good. I'll try it. That will be my taking aim.
Great. Because what you're doing is you're getting clear that you've got to find a motivation for him, and you're helping him to handle the situation with his siblings in a positive fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I like that comment for the whole thing.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. So any comments for Sheila from everybody else? Okay. Great. So I want to go to our wrap-up questions. You guys all have a chance to kind of take a few notes and reflect on the call today. So I'm on page 19. And there's 4 questions that we ask at the end of each call. The first one is, what did I focus on? What did I pay most attention to? What was the thing that I noticed the most about the call? The second question is, what's my clarity? What's my takeaway? What was the aha I had? The third thing is, what is a realistic action step I need to take? And the fourth thing is, how can I set myself up steps with this action? What do I need to do in order to make sure that I can step? So take a minute and just write that down. And I'd like to hear from about 3 or 5 of you. What's your takeaway, and what action do you want to commit to? Maybe I should call in some of our listener people. Those people weren't talking so much. Liz, you've been really quiet today.
Yes. I really liked the term exercising your grateful muscle, because that's something I've been working on, but that's such a great visualization for me to work on that even more aerobically, as far as trying to shift my energy to the positive, and also the recap of self-care today that we touched on, how that is such an important part of it all.
Right, thank you. Is there anything in particular you're going to take to do as a to-do from our call today?
I think we've had some really good successes during this first 6 weeks of school, and I want to continue celebrating those and building on them, and focusing on those instead of getting distracted by smaller bumps in the road. I think noticing the positive and keeping on that note in our relationship and our interactions is just going to, you know, keep that momentum going in the right direction.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Who else wants to share their takeaway or their commitment for action?
Hi, this is Megan. I have an action that I'm going to take.
Okay.
A while ago, we started doing a reward system with my kids, where we have 2 little glass jars, one for each of them, and when we notice them doing something good or nice or following directions or, you know, anything positive, we would put a little pom-pom in their jar, and it's kind of similar to the bucket filler type of thing. And we've just gotten away from that, and I think we need to bring it back and be more consistent with it, because my kids did really respond positively to it.
Awesome. Awesome. What do you need to do to make that happen?
I think I just need to, you know, put it in a more prominent spot where we'll be thinking about it, and just to keep it on the, you know, top of our minds.
Great. I think that's the important piece. Whenever we make a commitment, we need to also look at what's it going to take to for success. So that's the how do I set myself up for success. So thanks for sharing that. Anybody else? what else are you, you know, what were some ahas for folks? Or
okay, I have a question.
Sure, Lauren.
I've done a lot of those things, and I find that the kids do things then just to get their pom-pom, and then they're waiting for the reward, and it gets complicated and hard to, like, teach intrinsic as opposed to just intrinsically waiting for their pom-pom, you know?
So I can't tell, are you saying that you, their motivation is a pom-pom, or is you're trying it for too many different things and you're not sure where you're at? I'm not sure I understand the problem.
No, what I'm saying is I've done stuff like that, but for me, I find that the kids are just doing it so they can get the pom-pom. Instead of, like, wanting to do the things, they just want to get more pom-poms in the jar or more whatever you're putting in the jar. And then they're waiting for the reward so many times that it gets complicated. I just want to know how people do that so it doesn't end up being about things in the jar and about the reward. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and the reality is that it is about the motivation. I mean, I think the thing is with the ADHD brain, and we'll talk more about this in a couple of weeks, but the ADHD brain really does need motivation. And so if the pom-poms are a motivation and it's getting the behavior, you know, at the age that they're at right now, it may be okay that they're doing it for the purposes of getting the pom-pom. So as they get older, and as they, you know, you don't want to make everything about the pom-pom, so you don't want to have 17 different things that all end up being the pom-pom. You want to focus in on one behavior and do one behavior at a time, because I think that's where it gets overwhelming and confusing, is if, you know, in the morning you can get a pom-pom if you do this, and in the afternoon you can get a pom-pom if you do that, and at night you can get a pom-pom if you do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It gets so hard.
Okay.
Like,
it does get really complicated. Yes, okay, thank you. Sorry,
that's
Lauren. I did a webinar called Creating Reward Systems That Really Work, and it's one of the ones in the library, and so I'd encourage you to go out and listen to that, and it really talks about how to set it up in a way that allows you to be successful. But the trick is, don't try to reward too many different things at once. Pick one, maybe two things at once, and focus in on changing the behavior around those. You can go back and say, okay, for the last month we were getting pom-poms for this. Everybody's doing it now, and we're going to start getting pom-poms for something else. But we've got to keep doing the behavior that we changed last week, too. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, great. Okay, any other parting thoughts? We're about at time here. I want to honor people's time and let them off at 3 on the dot. So,
yeah, hey, Diane, this is Donna.
Hi.
So this topic is actually very appropriate because, like, since especially beginning the weekend and most especially today, I have always been very, very angry at my son. I guess to top that off, you know, as I was dropping him off to his school, we realized that he didn't bring his backpack. So I wasn't sure how to parent positively in that very specific situation. I was just really angry. But anyway, I guess on a personal note, I'm just going to try my very best to be more mindful of how I react or my reactions to, you know, whatever incorrect or unexpected things he does. And I think one of the moms brought up the same topic earlier. One of the activities that my son and I, that I do with my son, successfully in the past, was to do an end of day retrospective where we talk about, and this happens at bedtime, this, you know, where we talk about what worked well during the day and what would we do differently. And at that time, it was, you know, it worked well for us because he becomes more aware of the things that he needs to fix, and me as well. So we do both sides. He acknowledges his actions and I acknowledge my actions. So, you know,
great.
I mean, we've gotten very busy, so that kind of got lost along the process. So I think we just need to continue that, hopefully.
Well, and I think that it's, you know, it's baby steps, in all honesty. I mean, you want to try, you know, because part of what ends up happening with this, and we end up beating ourselves up because we're having a hard time being positive. But if you can find a way to, you know, trust, and I don't know if I said this earlier in this call or in the last call, but it's, you know, a kid post-it note on my desk that says best intentions. Trust it. If I trust that my child is trying to do their best and they want to please me, then I handle the situation completely different, and it enables me to be positive. Whereas if I focus on what they are doing wrong and how dare they and they're being defiant and they're being bad, it's much more difficult to be positive. And I know that positivity does work. So whatever it takes for me to focus on the positive is what is most important for me to focus on. Great. All right. And with that, thanks, everybody, for joining us. Would love to have you post that on the Facebook page. Just wanted to call your attention quickly before we hang up to one thing. Elaine and I did send you an email last week letting you know about a special offer we have on PSS Plus, which is our VIP program. So if you're feeling like you need a little extra help and want to do some additional coaching with us, check that out. We'd be happy to stay on if you want to talk to me or get on our calendar to speak a little bit more about that. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.